Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we don't have him with us yet, but we'll have, I'm sure, Dr. Tim Hayes. We welcome you to our show. Today is Wednesday, August the 5th, 2015. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because that makes this your show. We've got 3.5 days left of the intensive here at Heartland, and things have definitely been intensive. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart, and thank you, everyone who chooses to join us. We're blessed by the fact that you're here, and that we get to carry forward this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the corollary tools that we've developed around that process. As Jeannie says, we're in, day 13 of a 16-day, or day 12, I guess, of a 16-day Laws of Living. And lots of energy moving, lots of process happening, and we're just on task with it. We finish on Saturday, and we're complete with our session here at Heartland. We'll, from there, be spending a little bit of time here at Heartland, and then on the road again. Not sure just how it's all going to unfold yet. We're looking actually at several different options. Jeannie does have, and you might want to say a few things about that, Jeannie, a 4-day mini intensive with a group of women up in the Poconos and up in the Northeast. And Jeannie, you want to share some thoughts about your trip to the Poconos and the folks that are sponsoring it and all?
Sure. It's going to be in sign up will be actually on the website of the center that is hosting it. I'm one of the facilitators. It's for 4 days. It starts on a Thursday, October 15th, goes through Sunday, October the 18th. It's called Unveiling the Divine, The Journey into Myself. And it's 4-day women sponsored by Universal Truth Center in Miami Gardens. And there's myself and two other ladies who are facilitating it, and there'll be time off to play and look around the area and things like that. It's at the inn at Pocono Manor in Pocono Mountains, Pennsylvania. And if you go to, probably the easiest way is go to the whyagain.org website. Up at the top, you'll see the link that says Healing the Whole Woman. You can either click on that and read more about it, or you can actually click on their schedule, the flyer schedule at whyagain.org, and there's a link to Universal Truth Center, and that's where you have to go to register. And they're asking people to fly into Newark, New Jersey. And so it should be right fun. I'm not real sure yet. They haven't sent me the final schedule. I know that I'll have a 3-hour window on Friday or Saturday to present, and then I'll have a couple other smaller windows. So once they send me the final schedule, then I'll work up exactly, you know, what I'll be doing. Of course, I'll do the forgiveness work. And then depending on how much other time that they give me, whether I go into purpose or whatever. So we'll see how that works. But you go to their website, it's actually U-Truth, so the letter U, and then T-R-U-T-H, center.org, and then the Women's Retreat 2015. So that's an exciting time. It's actually a very exciting church, and we don't have anything confirmed with them yet, but they are the ones that drew us to looking at going back down to Florida, because they said they had several universities and a prison ministry, and they wanted us to do some more things at their church and work with their adult education program. And so, but we don't have anything confirmed with that yet. And so we were also looking at some possibilities of just sitting aside for 6 months and doing some writing. So anybody that is in listening ear, what we're also looking for is a space, a home to live in for 5 to 6 months, and just write, because Michael needs to get his book complete. I need to get mine complete. It takes a different mindset to get into the writing aspect than it does when we're traveling and doing workshops each evening. And so that's kind of on their agenda, and we're looking at that. So within the next month anyway, we'll be settling up which direction we're heading and what's going to be happening, and you just keep an eye on our website. So as of right now, the women's retreat's the only thing that's solid right now, and that's in Pocono, Pennsylvania.
And of course, the completion of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? Actually, when we finish the intensive here, Michael Coughlin is here, and he's going to assist us with another book that was actually started a few years back and never really completed. Mindshifter's Keys to the Unconscious. Back when I had a private practice, I used to complete each session by giving people a mind shifter, and so I've got several hundred of those. We're correlating them and putting them together with some information on how to use the mind shifters. So that's another project that's underway, and so we're going to take some time to be looking at those projects. We've done several new videos and just not had the space to complete the editing, so that'll be another project that we'll be tapping into and setting aside, and that's going to be our winter this year. So hold the space, and of course we're also talking about with Terry Bowling and a couple of other folks creating a revitalization of Heartland and bringing things together here on a whole new level. So keep an ear to the ground for that one, hold the space for it. And other than that, of course, our task, our purpose in what we do at this point is to make available the absolutely awesome first century Aramaic text of forgiveness, the very opposite of what this culture teaches. It gives people a tool with which to go inside themselves and clean up the parts of their minds that hold hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and pain, so that we can function without those things influencing our conscious awareness, our conscious thinking processes, and the perceptions that our mind builds. You know, it's a very well-established principle, although not a very well-known one, by those who research the mind, that, and I'll quote CIA on this one in their research on perception, that the mind does not record reality, it generates reality, it constructs reality. Everything we look at is a construct of our mind that comes out of the content of our minds. And when you realize that, who creates the content controls the mind. And of course, if you look at this, the way a lot of this insanity is going in the culture, the control of people's minds has been turned over to some of the loosest thinking, the most bizarre thinking that you can possibly imagine. And so we have a world that, well, in the last 75 years, has been documented to kill at least 175 million people. And the thing that somehow or other becomes acceptable as war. How does this happen? Day before yesterday, we did a still point reading session. And I was working on one woman doing energy field work and found myself kind of going into a different state of awareness than my normal mental thinking processes. And intuitively, as she was experiencing something in recall, I had an awareness of what was happening to her. And I could see her as a small child, and she was being struck, hit. And as I was working with her in this, it was kind of an altered state for me. I was aware that I wasn't in my normal way of thinking. But when I experienced her being hit, there was just this horrible shock that went through my whole system. And the thought that came with the shock, as I could see her being hit as a small child, was, oh my God, they actually hit these little beings here. They actually strike them. And it was a shock to my mind, being in the state that I was in, to experience that. And of course, we live in a culture where we call that normal and we say that's just discipline. Of course, the word discipline comes from the word disciple, which means properly taught. It does not mean properly beat up. But who sources the content runs the world and runs the mind. And we've had content sourced that hitting little kids is just, you know, that's how you discipline them. That's how you teach them. And adults grow up and say, oh, it never hurt me. Excuse me. The first time you were struck as a little being by the person who supposedly was to cherish you, there was so much hurt and so much pain. Even if it was just one of those little, and I've seen people write and talk about, well, it was just a little slap on the butt. Excuse me. The desire of this person who is 10 times your size to hurt you, to inflict pain, is insane. But in this culture, it's come to be just kind of normal. It's what you do to kids to keep them in line. Susan Tucker, who's a mom who works with parents on conscious parenting classes, you may have been on the show when she spoke about this, was doing a session on hitting children. And many people just avoid that word altogether. Oh, no. I didn't hit them. I just slapped them. But she shared that there was a woman in her class who had decided to give up striking her children when she was in the middle of her family's tradition. And I'm always amazed when I talk about this in a group of people, how many people just go, oh yeah, that was our tradition too. That when a child was going to be switched, the child had to go out and cut their own switch. And they came back and were hit with it by this loving parent. And the child came back in teary-eyed, saying, Mom, I couldn't reach any switches on the trees. And he opened his hand and said, here's some rocks you can throw at me. Now there's a child who doesn't know that our norm in our culture, the content of our minds, is that we hit these little beings. And he's learned something very important from being hit by his mother. That his mother wants to hurt him, and because he can't get a hold of a switch, he comes back in with rocks and says, here, throw these at me. That should shock your mind. If it doesn't, I invite you to really seriously start doing some really serious work. Because until you can get the shock of that, your mind has been bamboozled and brainwashed by a culture of violence that is going further and further and further afield. And it's just time for us to wake up and realize where we started, what we're made of. You know, if you've ever held a newborn child, you know exactly what love is. You know exactly what you're designed to live as and out of. And if you're not doing that, then I invite you to return to the fold. Come back. come back to human life, come back to the aliveness of a true human being, of this awesome active presence of love that you are. And maybe it's not too late to rebuild our culture into one of sanity. I was reading this morning, actually, some posts on Facebook about the tens of thousands of dogs that are shot every year by police actions, breaking into people's homes, totally non-violent, violent, suspected criminals, and the first thing you do is you kill the dog. And here's this group of men with their toys, their automatic weapons, and their gear, like they're in the middle of Afghanistan. In fact, one soldier said, "We wouldn't do that to people in Afghanistan in the war zone that we're there to kill. We wouldn't do that." And these guys go in and they unannounced knock down doors. And this is happening over 50,000 times a year now in America. And these guys with their automatic weapons and their body armor are walking in. Of course, the first thing the dog's going to do is bark, so they pop it. Tens of thousands of dogs a year. Actually, there are some activists who are saying this is going to be the rallying point that's going to stop it. They kill the people, so what? But start killing the dogs, the people are going to speak up. Puppicide. They've even got a name for it. It's called puppycide. They're fratricide when somebody kills their father. Fratricide when someone kills their mother. Now there's a word for it, puppycide. It's become so prevalent. They've got a word for it. What is going on in our culture? Whatever happened to the idea we had men and women in uniform in our cities called peace officers? Oh no, we don't have those anymore. Now they're called police and law enforcement. You know, it starts in the cradle and it ends up in the grave if we don't wake up and start to change what's happening in our minds. You and I, your children, your parents, yes, and the criminal down the block has made the stuff called love. And we can return to that experience if we have the tools. But if our minds have been filled with something else, it's a difficult experience to return to. So that's what we're here to support. Returning to the experience of love by engaging in the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, which is the tool for going inside yourself to remove what never belonged there. What never belonged there? The kinds of things that never belonged there were, oh, we're not shocked that people hit children. You should be shocked. We're not shocked that guys in uniform walk into somebody's house and suspected. Actually, there was one case in St. Louis where the family was suspected of a code violation, and they sent four officers in their flak jackets with their automatic weapons, and the first thing they did was shot the dog. You should be shocked by that if you're not. It's wake-up time. Forgiveness means that when you have it, you have a tool with which, if there's something going on inside of you that is unlike the presence of love, you have a tool for dismantling that, for freeing yourself from it. If you haven't engaged in that tool as yet, we invite you to go to our website, www.whyagain.org. And if you scroll down the page a little bit, you'll see a bullseye in the middle of the page. Click on the bullseye, and that will open a whole series of links. The first link is to Chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? It's all about forgiveness. The second link is worksheets that we've developed. We invite you to start with the first worksheet at the top of the list. The third link gives you a series of important radio shows, and in particular, a group of shows where we walk somebody through the whole forgiveness process step by step by step. So we invite you to engage in the process and become part of the shifting of the energy of insanity in the world back to true human life, the true active presence of love that we're designed to do. It won't necessarily be a pleasant process, because to do that, you're going to have to confront whatever content is in your mind that's unlike love. And that's not always fun. But it's powerful to do. Powerful. So we're honored and delighted that you're here to share this time with us. And Jeannie, do we have Dr. Tim?
We do have him, and he is on.
Well, let's say hello, and how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you, and I'm glad I have the tools of forgiveness to refocus my energy on loving thoughts and remove what's not loving from my system. And we had a support group last night where we watched the first half of The Circle of Life and How to Play It, and then we had a discussion, and then we had a worksheet that was very powerful once again. One more time, somebody decided to interrupt the conditioned pattern of blaming someone and something outside of themselves for what they're feeling, identified the trigger, resisted the urge to run away, and pulled out a reality management worksheet and actually got some clarity about the part of their mind that was creating the upset and the part of their energetic field that went back generations. It was a very deep, very moving experience, a lot of energy moving, and it reminded me of the story you tell and that Julie Haverstick has told about a time when I was at Heartland and she was there, and she had such pain that she couldn't really function well, and you helped process her and do some work, and she literally had an experience of being someone other than herself, someone from her past, either in her bloodline or as an incarnation, who was a woman who had been shot or stabbed with a spear. And that's the kind of deep work that was done last night in the support group. And it's quite an amazing process when you have willingness and you have the love and support of a group full of people, 8 or 9 other people, and you have the tools and you're actually willing to use them. And the negative energies that were released and the progress that was made last night is just amazing. I have gratitude for the tools, and I have gratitude for my ability to be part of this process and to be surrounded with such willing people. And I have the knowledge, the felt experience of being in the room, in all of these rooms with all of these shifts, of realizing we are doing the work of getting rid of a lot of that bitter, angry, hurt, confused, vengeful energy that you were talking about in your intro. And we're doing it one worksheet at a time. We're doing it one mind shifter at a time. We're doing it one support group at a time. And it's gaining momentum, and I'm very, very glad to be part of the team.
Absolutely. And it's awesome to watch somebody in excruciating so-called physical pain, who the minute they confront an issue, such as the one you're talking about, their excruciating physical pain simply disappears. And, you know, it's like it's mind-boggling from the standard mindset to realize that that's possible and that that happens and that it's really pain from energetic dynamics that don't belong in the system. It's always amazing to watch that happen. So let's check with Jeannie and see if there's anybody with a hand up in the phone queue. Of course, our call-in number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you on our switchboard, is 646-200-4169. And if you push 1 when you're in the phone queue, that will raise a little hand in the control panel. Jeannie will see you and introduce you by your area code. And so, Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up?
No, nobody has a hand up, and it's actually kind of weird. There is nobody in the chat room. I've rebooted it just in case there was something glitching on this end, but So that's real unusual, but there's nobody but me in the chat room. But no one has their hand up on the switchboard. First thing that came to mind was perhaps sharing first your story of the event in Atlanta where the lady shifted from fear to love, followed by Sam's story about her dogs, and then the story about her daughter. It's, I think, three really powerful examples of how we can shift and shift the energy in other people around.
Great idea. This came up in the workshop yesterday. Someone was justifying the violence of the world and violent attitudes, and that, you know, that's just the way the world is, and it's not changeable. So the story that Gina's referring to, I actually went to speak at a center in Atlanta back several years ago, and I had been there the year before and did a full week of workshops. And the morning that I arrived to speak at this center, a young woman came up to me and said, "Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life." And she proceeded to share that the year before she had been at the whole series of workshops, and that on a fairly regular basis, she would hear in her head my voice saying the words, which if you're in a workshop series that I do, you'll hear me say it often, conscious, active, present love. She said, "I, you know, just would hear you every once in a while. I'd hear that ring in my ears, and it would remind me." She said about 6 months earlier, she had come home from work and locked the door inside herself inside the apartment and turned to find a man with a knife at her throat who said that he was going to rape her and kill her, which he proceeded to do. And she said she was absolutely terrified because she knew this man was serious and was going to kill her. She said, "I was actually being raped, and I heard your voice in my head say, conscious, active, present love." She said, "It was like that threw a switch. Something just shifted in me. And all of a sudden, I was connected to love, and my fear was not there anymore." And she said, "I looked at this man's face, and all I could see was," and her words were, "stark raving terror." And she said, "Even though I knew I was dead, that he was going to kill me, and he was in the act of raping me," she said, "I just went into total compassion for him. And when I looked at him from that place of compassion," she said, "he began to cry, dropped his knife, got up off of me, and ran out of my apartment." The power of the active presence of love is absolutely awesome and amazing. There's also, Jeannie, before you share those other two stories, there's also a video link on our website, which is a story about two young men in England who went to Harrods department store one day and bought a pet lion. They had a cub on sale, and they bought this lion and raised it until it became so big they couldn't handle it. They crated it off and sent it to a preserve in Africa. About a year later, they went to the preserve to see their lion. The people protested who ran the preserve and said, "Wait a minute, we've got this beast tagged. This is a wild lion. It will tear you to shreds if you go out to find it." In the video, you see them out there. It's tagged so they know approximately where they're. They're out there calling this lion's name as one of the guards is standing there with a high-powered rifle because they know they're going to have to kill this tiger, or this lion, pardon me. All of a sudden, the lion comes running down the hill, jumps up on them, and is just all over them like a giant pussycat, licking on them, paws around them, playing with them, hugging them. I mean, hugging them. It's absolutely an amazing video to watch. But what fits with this principle that we're talking about is that not only did the male that they knew come down the hill, but his mate, which was a totally wild lioness, and the lioness is the huntress. And I'm sure that this lion, whose name was Christian, didn't say to his wife up the hill, "Dear, these are my friends, don't eat them," but the female, totally wild lion, comes up and rubs against these guys' legs like a cat, like a house cat, and lets them pet her. How is that possible? Well, there's a principle that we teach. It's called, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. When I can free myself from the chains of hostility and fear, I can awaken a space in me that touches every other creature, including, in this case, now, was it the mindset, the energy field, the holding of the space of love that Christian had for his friends? Was it his friends? I don't know. But a wild lion lets two men pet her. Makes no sense in any way of understanding the world, except from an energetic perspective where you realize the energy you hold makes a difference. So that's another example. And then Jeannie had gotten an email from a friend, actually two emails, when she shared this. So go ahead, Jean.
It's just okay, and
to share this
hopefully
personally.
We're having a tremendous storm here, and I just lost internet connection, but I'll kind of summarize what it was. I got one from a friend of ours who has done this work for a long time, and she said that she was taking her two dogs out for a walk. And going, you know, as soon as they went out their door, that these three big dogs come running down their driveway, and she said, I don't have any idea where they came from. And they were snarling and growling and charging after them. And her big dog, which she says has no angry bone in its body, just went wagging its tail and running up to them. I mean, even though they were snarling and growling, her dog just went wagging its tail and run up to them and said, two of them just froze and kind of backed up. And the other one stood still but didn't retreat. And her dog goes over and just starts smelling the dog that didn't retreat. And after a few seconds, turned around and just come back to her, wagging its tail still. And the other dogs were just still sitting there in the driveway like, what? And so that was real colorful. Yeah. And then she sent another one, and I told her I shared that in class last night. And she said, well, I'll also share the one about my daughter. She said her daughter just kind of like, you know, was like, yeah, right, on all of this, you know, energy and holding the space, and, you know, that it was just kind of like poo-poo. But then her daughter bought a house that was kind of out in the midst of nowhere, and she was out there cleaning up and painting and stuff one evening, and she heard somebody stomping across her front porch, and she knew she couldn't go hide because she was in the kitchen and the kitchen door was mostly glass, and so they could see in, and somebody just starts banging on the door. So she goes to the door, she sees that it's a little old woman, so she opens the door. Well, this little old woman just politely brings up her shotgun and points it right at her daughter. And of course she goes into immediate fear, and she's like, can I help you? And the lady says, you know, someone's running a radio and the radio waves are driving me crazy. So this woman's daughter, you know, just kind of looks there and she says, well, I'm only playing a CD player, so it doesn't have radio waves, so it's not me. And the lady was like, well, somebody here is doing something that's driving me crazy. And so then said her daughter just kind of shifted. She remembered the story, and I guess she felt like she didn't have anything to lose at that point. And so she says, well, hi, my name's Shannon. You must be my new neighbor. And she kind of held her hand out towards the little old lady and said, the lady put her gun down to her side and backed up and looked at her and then just turned around and ran away. And so she called her mom and she's like, she couldn't stand to stay in my space. It's awesome. So it made a believer of her real quick. But I just thought that was pretty cool.
The space we hold produces results. The space of hatred and fear produces results of hatred and fear. We get what we expect. The space of love tends to produce the space of love, and things shift and change. And the culture has created such a focus, you know, and we even have an official fear alert. Oh, it's orange today, it's red, it's yellow. You know, keep people in fear, and they tend to lose their capacity to function as human beings. And fear is an internal dynamic that can be forgiven, can be removed. We can return to human life. We can return to that awesome presence of love and produce different results. all around us. So that's our reasoned answer. Our reason for being is to share those tools with you, to empower you to use those tools, and to support you in working through anything that comes up as you engage in the tool of forgiveness. And as we start to go inside of ourselves and look at the root of some of these things, for most people, there's some pretty heavy-duty stuff in there. Not Dr. Feelgood to go in and clean it up. But when you realize that the creative force of your life expresses through what you hold in you, and when you realize that you can hold something different than, you know, the deck of cards that's been dealt to you, you know, whatever has come from your genes, you know, I'm shocked at how many people over the years that I've worked with have been physically, verbally, mentally, emotionally, and sexually abused. I'm shocked at how often I see that, at how many people, men and women, who have been sexually violated by their parents, by neighbors, by friends. It's just, it's amazing how many people, I mean, how often, you know, a lady was describing to us how her mother's got her down on the floor and pounding her head into the floor and screaming at her how, you don't love me. And it's like kind of hard to be the space of love while your head's being pounded into the floor. But these are the things that have happened to people and are stored in long-term memory. You know, we've talked several times about the movie Inside Out. If you haven't seen it, go and see it. And it shows this being, Joy, the real being inside the head of this child, who gets lost in long-term memory. And that's where most people, their whole lives are spent. They think they're living out there in the world, but they're really living in the replay of long-term memory, the replication of realities from this energy system of long-term memory where, you know, I mean, what kind of atrocities does each of us carry in us when you realize that our parents' parents, and their parents, let's go back three generations, have had the experience of 150 million people being murdered in this world? What have we been touched by? What happened to human life? And if we've got the skills and the tools, which, you know, they were taught 2,000 years ago and then disappeared, how do you go in and remove those things that never belonged? Because if you don't remove those things that never belonged, and it's a pretty well-accepted idea that 95% of our psychological and mental processes are unconscious, if our feeling and our thinking and our behavior runs out of that 95%, and you ask so many people, why did you do that? They say, I don't know. It means it's being run from an unconscious level. What the forgiveness process does is it allows us to open from that little tiny awareness called conscious into those deeper levels of mind. And it always, always amazes me. After 35 years of doing it with people, it always amazes me when people engage in the core of the forgiveness process, just what kind of things they drop into and come to experience. That afterward they say, I had no idea that was there. No idea that was there. And oftentimes the unwillingness to confront those things is one of the biggest challenges. Well, why wouldn't I just keep that buried and pretend it was never there? Because if you keep it buried and pretend it was never there, you will never consciously be aware of its impact on your thinking, your feeling, and your behavior. The things that you do will be motivated from those hidden parts of the mind. The Aramaic language is the only language on the planet that when you add a suffix to a word, that suffix means that there is something from the unconscious level of mind. This is built right into the language. Freud no more discovered the unconscious than fly in the air. is built into the syntax of the Aramaic language, and you add O-O-T-T-A to a word, that means that something from the unconscious level of mind is impacting three things. Perception, that is the construct of the output of your mind. If there's something you have refused to look at, admit, acknowledge, deal with, when it comes into play, when it is resonated by something in your world, that impacts the construct of the pictures, the world that you see. So perception is grossly impacted by those unconscious dynamics. Decisions. This word in Aramaic, or this suffix in Aramaic, means that if something fires this unconscious part of the mind, and that part of the mind is active, your decisions will be based upon that which is in activity in the unconscious mind. And people say, I don't know why I thought that. I don't know why I did that. I don't know why I felt that way. I have no idea. It's because it's hidden. So decisions, which, you know, you take a look at the decisions people make and the atrocities are done out of the decisions. And then the behaviors. Decision leads to behavior. Perception leads to and is part of the decision-making process. And so the majority of people, instead of, because they have these unconscious dynamics, they refuse to come into relationship with and clean up, behave out of those unconscious dynamics instead of as human beings, instead of out of the active presence of love that we're designed to function from. Have you ever said to yourself, I don't know why I did that? Perceptions, decisions, behavior from the unconscious. In a world where 150 million people have been killed in the last 70 years, which of us hasn't been impacted, painfully impacted, by those dynamics? And it will bless you, move your life, to have the tools and to use the tools to go into those dynamics so that the next time your child misbehaves and that misbehavior triggers that unconscious part of the mind, that instead of dealing with the child, your precious child who's misbehaving, you deal from that Buddha set of brain cells, that unconscious part of the mind that thinks it's facing a survival issue and is willing to lash out at a small child. You're empowered to clean up those parts of your mind and to live differently. That's what we're here for. It's a great story, Tim. And Jeannie, is there anybody with a hand up at this moment? I know you had to reset the router.
There was a hand up, and when I came back from resetting, they had gone off. So if you're still in the switchboard, if you would press 1, that'll put you back up in queue, and I can get you turned on, and you can talk to us.
Cool. And Dr. Tim, there's a story which we've told every once in a while, and I think it deserves to be told, you know, very regularly, that you introduced to the show from the book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, about the gentleman in Poland who ended up in the concentration camps. Maybe you'd share that story with us, because it just fits so powerfully in line with everything we're talking about.
Well, I'd be happy to. It's essentially, you know, a more modern-day version of it is found in the life of Nelson Mandela, where Nelson Mandela was put in prison not for a few weeks or a few months or a few years, but for, I believe it was 26 years. And the same kind of thing happened when they were liberating the people in the concentration camps and the torture camps and the euthanasia camps in Germany. And one of the doctors that was part of the team to go in and evaluate people and work with the release and stabilizing people, he noticed a gentleman who was tall and looked fit and strong, compared to everybody else in the camp, and he assumed he must have only been there for a few weeks because everybody else was emaciated and starving and sickly. So when he got to talking to this gentleman, did he brief him, and he asked him about his story, he was shocked to find out that he'd been there for years. And he said, how could this be? And the gentleman said, well, this is my story. I was in Poland, and they came in and took us out as a family, and they did a little bit of an assessment and found out that I spoke several languages, and then they lined my family up against the wall in front of me and shot them all. And he said, I begged them to kill me right then. And they wouldn't because they thought they would have a use for me in the camps. And he said, I'd been a lawyer up to that time in my life, and I knew from my life as a lawyer and all these people that would come to me in anger and bitterness and resentment, hatred of other people, wanting to sue them, etc. I had seen what hatred does to a person, and he said, I had a decision to make. I had to decide in that moment whether I was going to turn my life over to anger and resentment, or if I was going to choose to focus on love. And he said, I didn't know whether I had a day left, a half a day, a year left, but he said, I made the decision right then and there. I was not turning my life over to hatred, and I just focused on love. And when he came to the camps, that's what he did. He sent loving thoughts to the guards. He sent loving thoughts to the other prisoners, whether they were treating each other well or not. And he simply refused to participate in the energy of bitterness and resentment and hatred. And the result was he had more vitality and strength in him than his rescuers could even comprehend. So, and essentially that's what Nelson Mandela did. He said he realized that if he harbored anger and hatred at his captors, even after they released him, if they ever did, he'd still be in prison. And I think, you know, Michael, I think you've told the story of how his captors wanted to break him, and so they kept putting the meanest guards they could in charge of Nelson Mandela, and Nelson Mandela simply returned love to these guards until the guards found they couldn't be abusive to him anymore. And then the people running the prison decided, well, we have to change out the guards. And sure enough, they had to keep changing out the guards because his loving energy coming at them eventually wore them down, and they found they couldn't keep being abusive to him. So it's a choice. We have a choice. Somebody pointed out in the group last night when I made the statement, somebody asked me to repeat a statement that I make on a regular basis, which is kind of a distillation of things that I've gotten from a variety of different teachers, but it comes across as this. We each of us has the infinite capacity to choose the focus of our conscious awareness in each moment of our lives. And what we choose to focus our conscious awareness on in each moment of our lives literally creates our experience of life in that moment. And this is how we are literally the creators of our experience of life in each moment. So I repeated that, and then somebody had an excellent question and said, I can't buy that. You know, once I get triggered, I can't stop. And I tried to address that issue and said, yes, once I'm triggered, I have these strong energies in me, and if they get resonated and triggered, I do not have a choice about whether or not I feel those energies. I do have this spiritual faculty of will and choice, which if I strengthen it prior to getting triggered, gives me the ability to choose how to respond once those energies are triggered in me, gives me the ability to choose how to focus some energy each day, 10% of my time, intelligence, money, and energy, on those things which will build and strengthen my viable conscious spiritual body so that I'm better equipped to deal with the negative energies in me that can get resonated, and then from a space of being able to step back, realizing I've been triggered, choose from a higher part of my awareness how to respond. So that's my offering.
Definitely powerful, definitely right on track. And of course, those who are lost in the hostility and fear don't even have the awareness there's a different choice available. And it takes time to chip away, to forgive enough of the dynamics of hostility and fear that have become so prevalent in our world to change the game. And the game is changing for many, many people, and that's what we're here to support. And if you have a question for us, I think we've got about 18 minutes or so left, so we've got time for some good conversation or a question. And if you're on the phone, in the phone queue, if you push 1, that will put your hand up, and Jeannie will know you have a question for us. If you're in the chat room, of course, if you're a member of the chat room, you can write your question. If you're not a member, unfortunately, you can just read the chat room, but it's a simple process of registering for it, then you'll be able to communicate in the chat room as well. So, and Blog Talk does keep your information private. So Jeannie, do we have anybody with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room to be aware of?
There's nobody in the chat room today. And the person that's on the switchboard hasn't put their hand back up. We're actually down to 7 minutes. But,
oh, really? Oh, I thought, gee, this has been fast.
Has 7 minutes, yeah. So we have time for one more, but nobody has their hand up.
Well, I'm going to put out a movie title that everyone would want to take a look at. Actually, there are a couple of very powerful films that demonstrate these principles and these tools. One of them
hand
is...
Hand up.
Let's go for that then.
All right, 970, you're on the air.
Hi, Michael and Jeannie and Tim. This is Stuart in Pagosa Springs.
Welcome, sir. Delighted to hear your voice.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Honored. How can we support you today?
Well, a couple of things. One, the talk on the animals today, really struck a chord with me. I didn't really have a question, although it could turn into a question at some point. But I had an experience. Maybe about 2 weeks ago now. I have a new dog that was a rescue. She's a little Chihuahua, and I've always raised my dogs with positive reinforcement and love, and never give any attention to the negative behavior, and just always reward the good behavior. Well, I had an experience. This little Chihuahua, her name is Geisha, she challenged me like 3 times in one day with not being very good. And the first several times I was calm, and then by the third time something went off in me. And I actually did something I hadn't done with any of my dogs. Ever, or even with my child when I raised him for 18 years. But I spanked her. And boy, did it, first of all, it scared the crap out of her. Chihuahuas are extremely sensitive dogs, and I know she's come into my life to help me heal on some other aspects of my life. But, and so she played a part, for me in this experience. Where she, after I spanked her and I realized what I had done and I saw the fear in her, and of course it reflected right back to me, and the guilt that came in was just horrendous. I mean, I couldn't believe that something had snapped in me to where I actually had spanked her. And she was, for that whole day and even into that evening, she was completely afraid of me. I mean, just if I came into the room, she would just roll over onto her back, whimper, cry. And I was just, I thought, oh my God, I've ruined this dog with my issue. Mm-hmm. And it scared me. And I had a tremendous amount of guilt and anguish over it. And I'm new to the worksheets over the last 3 or 4 weeks. But I've been very resistant over the last couple of years since I've been listening to your work, thanks to Carrie Ellis, and being introduced to your work. But anyway, I'll get to, I know we don't have much time, so I'll get to the good part of the story is I did a worksheet on it, on my guilt and all the different emotions that came up around that. And I processed right. through it, and I was able to see that, I mean, that happened when, of course, when I was a child. I don't remember most of my childhood. I blocked most of it out. But it was a verbally and even physically abusive childhood. And so I was able to tap into that energy, and I was able to go back into the forgiveness, and I saw the patterning, and it was mainly my brothers. And so I did a worksheet on geisha. And the interesting part is that, and this was about a day later after the incident, and she was still just as scared of me. As soon as I got done with the worksheet and I got done with my breathing, her energy shifted and it was over. She was in my lap and everything was fine.
Awesome.
So,
amazing,
I mean,
isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
It is amazing. And, you know, when you tie that together, I don't know if you've seen the video of Why Is This Happening to Me Again or heard us talk about the work of Marcel Vogel. I didn't realize how important this little piece of information from Marcel that I picked up about 30 years ago. Marcel Vogel was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM. And I used to keynote at a conference called the Global Science Conference out in Colorado. They did that fairly often. And one year Marcel was there, and he brought a camera that was called a Delaware camera. And it's a camera that does not take pictures of light waves as a normal camera, but rather is tunable through frequency tuners to different energy patterns. And what Marcel introduced as a senior scientist from IBM and the kind of mind Marcel's got, he's the guy who invented the magnetic coating that allows our hard drives to work. That's all Marcel's work. Without Marcel Vogel's work at IBM, we would not have hard drives in our computers. So he's got this camera, and when he tunes it correctly, he can take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. So literally, once that energy was activated in you, you're radiating an energy, and of course animals are totally attuned to the energies around them and respond. And going, collapsing the surface mind's ideas around what happened and dropping into that deeper part of the mind, bringing it forward and exposing it to love, creates really a transmutation in a different field, which, you know, it looks like a miracle because how did somebody out there change because of what I changed in me? When the truth is, it changed because I changed the energy that I'm sending out into the world, and most people exist. So nice piece of work. That's awesome. And I'll look forward to chatting with you perhaps sometime later today or tomorrow. I'll be giving you a call. We're down to the last few seconds, so I don't know if you have anything else to share, but if you do, perhaps we can pick that up in tomorrow's show because we're just about out of time, and we appreciate everybody who chooses to listen, and thank you for your call, Stuart. I'll look forward to chatting with you, and have a blessed day. Everybody, create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Bring a stranger to the show tomorrow. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.